Welcome to the conference room with this week's guest, Bob Ackerman.
Describe the nature of a startup founder is someone who steps up to the edge of a cliff and is ready to jump off, fully convinced that they can fly. Like gravity doesn't apply to me, right? But what you, and that's kind of the enthusiasm, that's the hubris that allows a startup to, you know, a startup founder or a founding team to walk into a market and I say, I know the odds are long and they're stacked against me, but that doesn't apply to me. I'm different.
Welcome to The Conference Room, a weekly podcast where business leaders and growth experts kindly share their experiences, actionable tips, and secrets to successfully grow a business. If you like the podcast, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a five-star review. It'll really help us out. And I really hope you enjoy this week's episode. I'm Simon Lader. Welcome to The Conference Room. Good afternoon and welcome to The Conference Room. I'm delighted to say I'm joined today by Mr. Bob Ackerman. Bob is the founder and managing director of venture capital firm Allegis Cyber. He has over 25 years of VC experience, of which 23 have been in cyber, with successful exits including Celera, who were acquired by Bluecoat, Shape Security, who were sold to F5 Networks for $1 billion, E8 Security, who were acquired by VMware, and Ironport Systems, who were acquired by Cisco. Prior to his VC career, Bob was the president and CEO of Unisoft Systems, a global leading Unix system house, and founder and CEO of Infogear, who were the designers of the first touchscreen cell phone, which he successfully sold to Cisco Systems for over $300 million. He is the co-founder of DataDrive, the world's leading cybersecurity foundry, and sits on the board of several startup and early stage companies, such as Dragos and Panacea. He teaches new venture finance in the MBA program at the University of California and has been recognized as a Fortune 100 cybersecurity executive, one of cybersecurity's money men, and the godfather of cybersecurity. It's a genuine pleasure to say, Bob Ackerman, welcome to the conference room.
Simon, thank you very much. I think I should just take my bow and go to bed now. It's I'm exhausted. So, but thank you for that very, very warm introduction.
It's a genuine pleasure. So every hero has an origin story, and you're the hero of our story. So how did you first get into cyber? How did you first get into technology? And then from that into being a VC and having the success that you've had?
Well, you know, well, I get, if you talk about origins, it goes back to, I have a degree in computer science. I tend to be in the deeper side of the technical pool. I'm an operating systems guy. So out of university, I went to work for one of the big major computer companies for about 3 years on the product management side of the organization. But quickly, you know, frankly, grew tired of working in a very large organization and had an opportunity to leave with one of the executives of that very large multi-billion dollar company to join the startup world. And frankly, I've never looked back. And so I've always sort of straddled, because of the technical background, sort of the more technical side of what's going on in the venture community, principally focused on software. So, you know, I did a little company called YCAT Systems, which went public. And then I did another workstation company where in both cases, I put Unix on these machines. Unix had never been on a microprocessor-based computer. So I put Unix as part of my product strategy on the YCAT boxes and then on the Callan Data Systems boxes. At Callan, it was backed by Sequoia and ended up going and running Unisoft, which was the software company I used to put Unix on those two hardware boxes. Built that company from a small shop in Berkeley to being a global leader in Unix operating systems with offices around the world. Along the way, ran into a little piece of technology that proposed to integrate the web and telephony. And I picked up that that patent and the core of that intellectual property team and started a company called Infogear, where we actually built the original iPhones. They're actually called iPhones. We owned the trademark iPhone, owned the trademark iPad, and had the seminal patent for the integration of web and telephony, as you pointed out. We sold that to Cisco for a very, very nice return. number of years later, Apple decided to create something similar and called it iPhone. And when I was at Infogear, we were backed by NEA. And you know, I had the benefit of both being backed by Sequoia and NEA, of a lot of encouragement, to actually get into venture capital. And the Sequoia guys, you know, really pushed it pretty hard. It's like, you should be in venture capital. And why don't we back you to do a seed fund? And I really didn't feel like I had the product side and the technical side of the equation, but I felt that there was more I needed to know about the venture business. So I actually had worked with a couple of other venture firms and partnered with one of them to launch what is today Allegis Cyber. And as you point out, it was, you know, 25 plus years ago. And very early on, going back to 2000, I started investing in cybersecurity. It says that attraction to the more technical side of the equation. We found a fair amount of success there. Ironport was one of those very early significant exits that we had. And about 10 years ago, we made a decision to go all in on cyber. The realization was, A, we're pretty good at it, but our belief was that cyber was going to move from sort of the niche world of paranoia to a mainstream phenomena as the global economy digitized. My assessment was that cyber would represent the existential threat to that digitized global economy, that it was broadly horizontal, but that it was very technical. It moved very fast. You couldn't do it part-time. Be like doing life sciences part-time. You really had to become a domain master, develop really deep expertise if you were to be successful. So, you know, that led us from being Allegis Capital to Allegis Cyber Capital as the first venture firm in the world to focus on cyber exclusively. We raised the first, you know, dedicated cyber venture funds. And frankly, we've never looked back. So
that's amazing. So first off, in your mind, what separates, for someone that's listening and wants to, for want of a better term, get into bed with a VC, what separates the good VCs from the not good VCs?
Look, I'm an operator, right? So I've got some pretty hard hard-earned perspectives on that question. Yeah, you go back, first of all, to the origins of the venture capital community. Who were the first venture capitalists? The first venture capitalists were all ex-operators that had a modicum of success in building their own companies and got to a point in time where, because of that success, they were sought out by next-generation entrepreneurs. Can you help me? Can you help me with capital? Can you help me pull a team together? Can you help me figure out how to build a business? Can you guide me? And that really was the genesis of so much of the venture community. And as venture capital, based on its success, continued to grow, and that growth was compounded, we lost something along the way, in my perspective. We lost that core of operating experience. We had a lot of very bright people managing a lot of money, but a smaller and smaller percentage of those partners in venture capital firms actually had operating backgrounds. And so, you know, my counsel, you know, our firm, whether it's Allegis, the entire team have operating backgrounds, Data Tribe, our foundry, where we start companies, all have operating backgrounds. My bias is towards venture capitalists with an operating background. As I tell people, unless you've laid awake at 2 a.m. going, how in the hell do I make payroll next month? You just don't know. You can't learn that at school. You can't read a book and pick that up. You have to really experience it. And so when you look at the venture capital community, venture capitalists, by and large, all have capital. It's largely a commodity. So now you start looking at the people behind the capital. What is their expertise? How can your partnership with them help you lower the risk, accelerate the growth of your company, anticipate where the minefields are, navigate those minefields successfully? So for me, I really focus on the people, even more than the firm, in terms of who is the partner I'm going to be working with, what is their background, and what contribution can they make to my success? How do they keep me out of the ditches? How do they help me accelerate going forward, help me get the right team, the right strategy, anticipate the challenges, steer around the potholes? That's what I'm looking for. And I think, by and large, you find that more often with ex-operating executives than you do with folks that may have very strong technical backgrounds from an academic perspective and have attended great business schools, but haven't really been in that CEO seat navigating through those choppy waters.
So do you feel that having that kind of real world experience, being able to, like you say, draw on the experience of having laid awake at night, is critical in being able to coach and guide the actual operating team of the company that you're seeking investment, as opposed to just, here's a check, guys, off you go. You guys, you know how to run your company. There you go.
Yeah, look, I think there's a reason why when you look at startup companies, there's a very, very high level of attrition. Most fail. Now, some of them fail because it wasn't a good idea, and they should fail. Some of them fail because they can't raise capital. Usually correlates to wasn't the best idea or may not be the best team. But, you know, I often tell entrepreneurs, look, you know, starting a company is like running through a minefield naked in the middle of the night. There are two ways to get through that. You can get on your hands and knees and slowly crawl through the minefield, hoping you don't put your hand or your knee on a mine, or you go get a map, you know, and that map in my metaphor is somebody who's done it before, who knows the path through the minefield, who can, you know, basically become your partner, and allow you navigate those challenges. And that's part of reducing the risk associated with building a startup company. It's experience. It's access to the resources you will need to mitigate the risk inherent in building a startup company. It's not the only way to do it. But I think, you know, if you have the opportunity to work with people that have built companies successfully in the past, that can share that experience and truly act as a partner, you know, not the people that, you know, they show up at board meetings and you don't hear about them until the next board meeting. But the people that are there, you know, any hour of the day, any day of the week when you need help, that are working with you in between the board meetings to work through the challenges that are inevitable and starting and building a company. That's what you should be looking for in a venture capitalist.
Okay, so flipping it on its head, what do venture capitalists look for in the companies? As in, how do you determine who's going to get that big check they need to take them Series A, Series B?
Well, you know, for me, first of all, operating in cyber, I look for ideas that are truly disruptive. One of the challenges associated with the venture community, and it's not a cyber phenomenon, it's a venture phenomena, is once venture capitalists identify an area of innovation or a sector of innovation where, you know, they're convinced it's hot, the venture community will crowd in and will tend to overcapitalize the sector, including funding things that probably should not be funded. Operating in cyber, being in the sort of the deeper end of the technology pool, I'm looking for what I call high value solutions to major problems. And so show me a problem that's clearly identified and clearly articulated. You may be anticipating it. It may not be obvious today, where you can build a high value solution to that problem, one that allows you to deliver value to a customer and create value in the enterprise. And so, number one, that's what I look for. Part and parcel with that, though, is I'm looking at the team. I'm looking at the experience of the team relative to the area of innovation. Are they domain masters? I'm looking for, frankly, their not just their IQ, but their EQ. Are they coachable? Can we sit down and talk about what's going right, but also what's going wrong? And how do we correct what's going wrong, or what mid-course corrections can we make? Because if I've got a lot of expertise, going back to, you know, our opening comment about the value of operating executives as venture capitalists, but I can't share that with an entrepreneur, then it's a waste. It's a waste for the entrepreneur and it's a waste for me. So I'm looking for truly big ideas, highly differentiated, that can be defended in the marketplace where value is going to be created. And I'm looking for a leadership team that are domain masters, because I'm not going to be a domain master. Whatever they're developing, whatever they're focused on, they're going to know more than I, or they better know more than I. But can we form a partnership relationship where we can work together, where they can feel secure and confident in coming to me for guidance and assistance, and I can be frank and open with them, and we really lock arms, you know, to share our relative strengths, but our complementary strengths on a journey of, you know, staking an opportunity in the marketplace where we can build a company.
Right. So let's just examine, if you will, One of the ones that we mentioned in your opening bio was Shape Security. Okay,
yep.
And certainly from what we the research that I did, that was a biggie. Okay,
yep.
So if you can think back, what was it perhaps about Shape Security at the very beginning when you first met the founders or you first read their pitch document or whatever it was? If you can go back to that, what was it perhaps that I'm not suggesting, or maybe it is, that you thought,
yeah,
God, this is a billion, you know, that quote from the movie, well, you know what's cooler than $1 million company, $1 billion company, right?
Right.
Whether or not you had that vision, if you did, can you pick my lotto numbers for next week? But what was it about Shape that perhaps set it apart from the other teams you'd met, the other pitch decks that you'd seen, that made you go, yeah, we're going to be all on this one?
Well, I think there were a number of factors. First of all, you know, Shape was operating in the denial of service space. So, you know, denial of service was sort of an emerging threat vector in the cybersecurity world. It's one that we anticipated would get much larger, which it subsequently did. So identification of a big problem, a very novel approach to solving the problem or tackling the problem using polymorphic compilers. Polymorphic compilers is kind of in the very deep end of technology. This is compilers, so it's pretty close to operating systems. I happen to know the guy that invented polymorphic compilers at Stanford University. I had worked on technology in that area in my operating days, so I had a familiarity with the technology and a real affinity for the power of polymorphic compilers. So a big problem, a very novel technical approach to dealing with the threats associated with denial of service attacks, and then a world-class management team. You know, Derek Smith had been a serial entrepreneur, had been successful with his previous companies in security, so he had good domain expertise, and we had known Derek for a while. And so when that opportunity came along, it was a combination of big idea, highly disruptive technical innovation approach to solving the problem, a world-class leader in Derek, who was building a world-class team. And that package together, you know, it still had all the risk of, can we build it? Does anybody care? Can we sell it? But, you know, as a foundation for building a company, it was big idea, disruptive innovation, world-class management team. That's a really good fit. You know, I'll give you another example, Dragos, which you mentioned in my bio. You know, Dragos is if people don't know Dragos, Dragos is the leader in industrial control system security. So this is electrical grids, manufacturing facilities, pipelines, petrochemical facilities. We actually started that company at Data Tribe. So we started with three engineers out of the National Security Agency. They were the part of the core NSA team on the offensive side of industrial control systems. Part of our playbook in cyber is to take teams that frankly are on the offensive side and put them to work in developing defensive countermeasures. That's just the way we think about the market. But we took three brilliant guys led by Rob Lee, who is the CEO and co-founder of Dragos today, out of the NSA. And you know, our idea is we're going to do something in industrial security. We're going to build a defensive response to the offensive threats that you guys have been involved in developing. And there, what we started with was a team with world-class expertise in that technical domain. Now, they hadn't built a business before, but that's okay. Data Tribe, our team at Data Tribe are all 3 to 5 times startup founders. So they have that DNA. So we could take their technical expertise, we could combine it with the operating expertise within the Data Tribe team, form a team to say, okay, let's take your expertise, let's identify a use case, let's build a product roadmap, let's develop a go-to-market strategy. And you know, we're gonna go after a market at that point in time that didn't exist. In fact, in the early days of Dragos, when I talked to, you know, the 10 guys in the venture community around cyber that you know, I view as my peers that I work closely with, which means I also compete with them, you know, the reaction was, Bob, what are you doing in industrial? Nobody's ever made money in industrial. And I said, well, cyber is going to change everything you thought about industrial. That slow moving, monolithic, big players, nothing ever changes. Cyber is going to change all of that. And, you know, their reaction was, well, how can you be so sure? I said, I've seen the offensive playbook. It's what I do. And you know, this is the next area of offensive cyber operations. The Russians have gone after the Ukrainian power grid twice. My guys were involved in responding to that. The Iranians have gone after petrochemical facilities in Saudi Arabia, trying to blow them up. So I see the offense being driven by nation states, and eventually, 4 to 6 years usually later, that ends up in the wild and becomes a new threat and vector that focuses on all the industry. And so, because we had that insight, this is part of that domain expertise and focusing, we were able to identify a team that had world-class expertise against our thesis that this was going to be a major opportunity, and we partnered. You know, and Dragos today, you know, is a unicorn in 6 years that shows 100% year-over-year growth every year, a world-class team that just are at the cutting edge of creating and defining an entirely new sector in cybersecurity. But again, it was that combination of big vision, team with extraordinary domain expertise that gave them an unfair competitive advantage, and our ability to come in and partner with them at the data tribe level to fill in the areas where maybe they needed a little more experience, a little more help, a little more guidance. And it's great. It's a, you know, it's been a great partnership. Started at data tribe, it moved into the Allegis portfolio, and you know, it's been a great ride. But it's you know, but it all started with a phenomenal team that. Deep technical expertise and a big opportunity.
Right. One thing that I noticed as you were describing both Shape in its early days and Dragos, one thing I noticed that was different was some of the leadership or the founding team at Shape. I think you said that they were led by someone who was a serial entrepreneur. Versus the guys at Dragos who were plugged straight out of the NSA. I'm imagining you've never done it before, right? So you have, you know, with these two, a stark contrast being an experienced management team and a first-time management team. How do you determine the, if you like, strengths and weaknesses of having that experience of having done it before versus these three guys that have got phenomenal domain expertise but don't have the operational expertise?
Well, I think, look, you know, the number of successful serial entrepreneurs in circulation in the venture community is a pretty small number. You know, I mean, it just is, right? There are not a lot of people that have built unicorns and going back to do the next one. And we had that in Derek Smith, and Derek's got a very, very high bar for building teams. And so we had a lot of confidence, you know, based on his past experience and success and his temperament, you know, that he would build a very strong team, which in fact he did. You know, in the case of the Dragos team, you know, there's a reason we started at Data Tribe and not at Allegis. Data Tribe is structured by design to engage with first-time entrepreneurs. You know, you look at our operating team at Data Tribe, as I indicated, you know, we have an operating team of eight. They've all got they all have technical degrees with MBAs, and they all have 3 to 5 startups behind them. So it's a hardcore nucleus of very experienced serial entrepreneurs. And our hypothesis was we would be able to find really capable technical visionaries in cyber, but they would need a lot of help on figuring out the business side of the equation. So we would build an organization that had that skill set, that we could meet them where they were and help get them to where they needed to be. You know, there's a reason all venture firms don't do seed investing. It's fundamentally different. It's a lot harder. It's much higher risk. It requires different skill sets. And again, you go back to a lot of the venture community that does not necessarily have operating backgrounds. You find a group of technical founders that never built a business. What value are you going to bring to them? And so when you get into the seed world, it really is, I think, particularly important that the investment partner, it's more partner than it is investment, to tell you the truth, have the skills to fill the gaps in the life experience of those entrepreneurs so that together it's a more complete package. You know, and then, frankly, you evaluate the ability of those founding teams to take guidance. You know, are they open to guidance, or do they figure, you know, do they feel like they've got it all figured out and they don't need any help? I will tell you, everybody needs help. Everybody needs doors to be open, access to people, experiences that they don't have. And so, you know, a warning sign for me is if I'm dealing with an entrepreneur who's doing it for the first time and feels like he has nothing to lose or nothing to gain or nothing to learn, so we, you know, this goes back to the EQ side of evaluating opportunities. IQ is important, but EQ, that self-awareness, becomes really important. Look, you know, if you look at the nature of an entrepreneur, right? You know, startups don't exist in nature by definition. You know, startups are revolutionary. Nature is evolutionary. So, you know, I always describe the nature of a startup founder is someone who steps up to the edge of a cliff and is ready to jump off, fully convinced that they can fly. Like gravity doesn't apply to me, right? But what you, and that's kind of the enthusiasm, that's the hubris that allows a startup to, you know, a startup founder or a founding team to walk into a market and I say, I know the odds are long and they're stacked against me, but that doesn't apply to me. I'm different. I have a better idea. I'm going to work harder. I've got a better team. That hubris is what allows startups to get started. And so it's a very positive, very healthy thing. But as you're jumping off that cliff, right, somewhere in the back of your mind better be that don't forget about gravity. That little bit of self-awareness about you've got a lot of enthusiasm, you've got an idea where you got a lot of conviction, but there's a thing called gravity and it acts on you as it acts on everything else. So be aware of that as you jump off. And so that self-awareness, that EQ for us becomes really, really vital when you're looking at, it may be a big opportunity, maybe great technology, but if that self-awareness is not there, you know, people hit the ground pretty hard. And, you know, the job of a good venture capitalist is to help identify those teams, but then to partner with them in a way to help de-risk their execution. You know, what can I do to reduce your risk, accelerate your growth, reduce your capital requirements, and improve your probability of success? You know, and the people that are most successful in bringing that value to a startup team or entrepreneurial team are people that have demonstrated an ability to do that. They've got that network, they've got that experience, they've got those resources and relationships that they can bring to the vision and the enthusiasm of an entrepreneurial team. And that goes a long way towards materially improving the probability of success.
Right. So whether it's, I would imagine, not so much a data tribe, more at Allegis, how do you have a policy or a profile almost of what a founding CEO should look like? How do you feel about first-time founders? Do you have any particular sort of view on that, or do you just sort of take each person on their own kind of merit?
Yeah, look, we take every opportunity on its own merits. Yeah, there's not a cookie cutter approach. I would say when we're looking at, we work with a lot of first-time founders. We have no issue with that. We were all first-time founders. Right. So we've traveled that road. We understand, but we also understand where you can get into trouble. So when we're evaluating first-time, you know, founders, we're looking at the EQ. Can we coach them? You know, can we have a conversation? Can we be partners? Or do they view us simply as money? If you view us simply as money, it's not going to be a good fit. But if you're self-aware enough to know there are things that I know and there's things that I don't know, and I'm looking for a partner that can complement my strengths and help mitigate my weaknesses. So we're looking for that level of self-awareness. In cyber, we're also looking for people that have deep technical domain expertise. Our conviction is you can't learn cyber fast enough. This market moves very, very fast. It's very dynamic. It's incredibly challenging. The half-life of any technology is half of what it is, or maybe a third of what it is in other areas of technology. So it's not a pickup game. So for us, our criteria is you better have deep cyber domain expertise, which is why, again, we drift towards people coming out of the National Security Agency, or we drift on people who've spent their entire careers in cybersecurity, because that's the foundation that we think you need to be able to innovate as quickly as this market evolves. So, you know, those are two things we look for. Frankly, you know, we also look for, is this a person who can tell a story? Is this a person that can raise money? Because only the CEO can raise money. And so you've got to look at, is this a person that can tell a story that can do it in a way that is convincing, with conviction, without arrogance and without a lot of puffery, and because they're the ones that raise money. And there's, we can open the door for them, we can make introductions, we can help prepare them. But at the end of the day, the next generation of venture investors who are going to invest in their company are investing in that CEO. And so we're evaluating, you know, sort of the strengths and weaknesses of that founder. And, you know, it doesn't mean there's a perfect candidate. Every so often you find a perfect candidate. Rob Lee at Dragos, perfect candidate. But most of the time, they're strong in certain areas, and there are other areas where they just haven't had a chance to develop muscle. And so the question then is, okay, how do we complement them? What does the rest of the team look like? Are there people that we can introduce into the equation that will give that team a more complete capability as they confront the marketplace? So, you know, I always talk about the big idea. I always talk about disruptive technology. But the people factor is as important as those other two. And I will tell you, a great team with a good idea will outperform a good team with a great idea. And so we like really strong teams. It doesn't mean they're always serial entrepreneurs, but there's a set of characteristics, you know, that they've got passion, they've got conviction, they've got intellectual horsepower, but they've got self-awareness. They understand where their vulnerabilities are. They're not blind to where their vulnerabilities are. And those are the things we look for.
So what three tips would you give to somebody that was looking to pitch to you? You know, if you could whisper in their ear the night before, what three tips would you give them if they were going to have a successful pitch?
Look, I think one of the really big mistakes that entrepreneurs make is they don't do the work up front in identifying the investors they want to target. I can't tell you, Simon, I can't tell you how many times a week I get an email from an entrepreneur that says, you know, Bob, you know, I've reviewed your portfolio, and based on your reputation, you know, I think our consumer tech deal is a perfect fit for your portfolio. Now, what that tells me is you have absolutely no idea who I am or what I do. that is feigning that you've actually done your work when, in fact, you've done none of your work. So, you know, when I was teaching at Berkeley, one of the things I always talk about is put the work in up front. Understand who you are and what you are and where you are most likely to find a welcome audience, and then figure out where that welcome audience is. You know, it may be stage. I'm a seed stage opportunity. Okay, who are the seed stage investors? You're in cybersecurity. Okay, who are the seed stage investors with domain expertise in cybersecurity? Because they are much more likely to understand the idea that you're promoting, and they're in a much better position to help you if in fact you get conviction. And then within that firm, who is the person that you should be talking to? Because at the end of the day, there will be an individual who will be the champion of your cause within that partnership, who will eventually sit on your board. So who is the individual? And number four is, how do you get a warm introduction to that person? Look, our firm looks at, we probably see 1,000 opportunities a year, and we will make 4 to 6 investments.
Wow.
Right. And so what is our process? Our process is say no as fast as you can. Right. So things that come in over the transom, you know, you'll get a 10-second look, and that's all you're going to get. And that 10-second better grab our attention, because you're competing with 999 other things for my attention, right? The best way to get my attention is to, and this is where social networking can be useful, is identify people that know me, where your relationship, your equity with an individual can be leveraged through that individual's relationship with me. The things that I always prioritize, I prioritize the things that come in from my CEOs, because they're trusted. I look at things that come in from other venture firms that I work with, and then it'll be other individuals out of the ecosystem that I know and I trust because they're calibrated. That's how I prioritize. You know, everybody else goes behind that. Let me tell you, I never get behind that. I never get past that group. That's the group that I'm really, really focused on. Now, in our case, our approach to the market is a little bit different because we have a thesis about where we want to build companies. A lot of people talk about, how come you guys have been so successful over the years? Well, it's because we're not driven by who walked in our office. We're driven by where are the gaps and holes in the marketplace. Where do companies need to be built? And that's a lot of what we do at Data Tribe. But we also do it at Allegis. So, you know, we've got areas where we want to build companies. And so in that case, we will either start the companies ourselves and build a team around that, or we'll go out looking proactively. So we may find somebody as a result of that proactive process where we say, look, we're going to do something, pick one. We're going to do something in cyber insurance. It's an area we've been looking at for 5 years. You know, we've done a lot of work. We have a lot of domain expertise. We haven't found it yet, but we keep looking because we know what the parameters we're looking for. So we're not going to sit back and hope it walks in our door. We're going to go out and find it. And if we can't find it, we'll start it. That's a little bit different, you know, in us as a venture firm. But if you've got an idea and you'll want to get our attention, you know, first of all, you know, who's you know, I'm going to use cyber as an example. Who is stage appropriate? Who is in this sector of the marketplace? Who has domain expertise? Identify the firm, identify the partner, and then find a way to get a warm introduction. You know, the same opportunity that comes in through a warm introduction versus one that comes over the transom, the one that comes in with a warm introduction is to get my attention. The probability the one that comes over the transom is going to get my attention, very, very remote. Not because I'm arrogant, not because I'm cocky. There are 168 hours in a week. That's all there is. And I've got to figure out, after I pull out a couple of hours for sleep each night, how to allocate that remaining time. And, you know, I'm allocating the time based on where I'm most likely to get a return on time invested. Yeah, and experience over 25 plus years tells me the referrals that come in from my trusted, calibrated network are going to be of a higher quality. They are pre-screened at a certain level. It doesn't mean they're an automatic by any stretch of the imagination. Most of them will get no's, but that's where I'm going to spend my time. And I only look beyond those referrals. When I've gone through all those referrals, and I haven't found what I'm looking for, then I'll step outside. But it's an exercise that enough entrepreneurs don't spend enough time in.
So on that, just out of sheer curiosity, if you look back over the 25 years, or even more recently, have any successful investments that have become exits, have any of them come from unsolicited over the, you know, just cold outreach?
That's a really interesting, I've not looked at that statistically. I'm sure there are some, but there will always have been a connection somewhere with our network. So they'll never be totally cold. You know, it'll happen. And somebody, the best way is, you know, is John Stewart was the head of security at Cisco. You know, John, you meet John Stewart, you know, John, you got a great idea. John gets excited. John calls me and it's like, okay, let's take a look. Now, the other thing is that you may send me a note that says, by the way, John recommended we call you. That's not as good as John calling me, but using John's name. Okay, now you're entering into a circle of trust. Now, what I'm going to figure out is how strong is your relationship with John? You know, one of the first things I do, if I see something that's unsolicited that I think is interesting, some of the stuff in post-quantum that we look at, you know, what is the first thing I do? You know, I'll read the first slide, which better tell me what you're doing. Okay. And I'm going to go back at the back and I'm looking at your board of directors and your advisors. And I'm going to go, okay, who do I know? Because what I'm looking for is the most time efficient way to get a read on, is this something I should spend time on? And so that developing the bona fides of your proposal, you know, there's technical bona fides, which eventually we'll get to. But the initial bona fides is the credibility of you and your team and your idea as validated through somebody that I know and I trust and I respect. And that's just the way we do it.
So, Bob, you've been doing this 25 years. You've probably got, you know, a few bucks put away somewhere. What excites you? Why do you still do it? What is it that gets you up in the morning?
Look, I got to tell you, there is, in general, there is nothing more fulfilling than working with entrepreneurs that have a vision to change the world. I've been a venture for 25 years. I still think of myself as an entrepreneur. I still think of myself as a CEO. And so identifying people that have ideas that truly will transform the society or the economy or technology in a meaningful way, where you can partner with them and share that journey. Boy, that's heady stuff. You know, and if you get more specific as to cyber, this is important. You know, cyber is that existential threat to the digitized global economy. And not taking anything away from consumer tech and some of the other areas that, you know, that people get excited about. But this moves the needle. It's like healthcare, life sciences. It moves the needle. It has a meaningful qualitative and quantitative impact on the world around us. And so I don't know if that's ego. I don't know if it's, if we're going to do things, let's do things that are significant. But cyber provides that for me in a way that leverages my experience, my technical capabilities, and my own experience of being successful. You know, and so for me, the ability to kind of apply everything I've learned over the years as an entrepreneur, my domain expertise, to share it with entrepreneurs, to help improve their probability of success in a way that when we are successful, we will move the needle for society. You know, that's a good and virtuous place to be. And if we're good at it, we'll make some money along the way. But it's driven, at least for me, it's driven by the engagement, the partnering with entrepreneurs. It's sharing that journey.
Great stuff. And yeah, a reason to get out of bed.
No, it's, I mean, look, that's why I say it's, I always go back 168 hours in a week. I wish there were more. You know, I work 7 days a week. You know, I love what I do. It's an honor. It's a privilege to work with talented entrepreneurs. There's just no two ways around it. You know, that's the part I love. And you get to do that in early stage. Later stage is a little bit different. You know, it's more math and numbers games and things like that. I want to get, you know, I'm that former entrepreneur that's not comfortable in the stands, who wants to get down on the field with you. And you know, if he could be a player coach, that's where I want to be. And frankly, I think you know, for an entrepreneur looking for venture capitals, look for those people. Look for people that take, you know, they're not letting it become a numbers game. Well, we'll make 30 investments, nature will sort it out. They take your success, the challenges you're dealing with, they take it personally. It's not just personal to you, but it's personal to them. They are vested in your success. Your success is their success. Your failure affects them directly in a very deeply personal way. And so looking for that commitment, that buy-in, that band of brothers, we're going to lock arms and we're going to get through this. You know, I go back to my days as an entrepreneur. That's what I was looking for. And I was fortunate to find, you know, partners and very good firms that had that experience, that were able, because they had entrepreneurial experience that I didn't have. They came with their own bona fides. They came with experience that they could share with me that frankly heightened their my perception of their competency. You know, you've been there, done that, as opposed to you're doing this the first time with me. You know, somebody who can speak from experience that, yeah, let me tell you, when I laid awake at 2 a.m. trying to figure out how the hell do I make payroll? Yeah, I get it. Let me tell you how I dealt with it. Let me tell you my thought process. Let me tell you how I managed that. You know, that's much more relevant than you know, folks that, I don't want to take anything away from people that went to business school. There's all, you know, I've taught at a business school, one of the top ones in the world, phenomenally bright people. But for the early stage, that experience of having sat in the seat of the founder CEO is absolutely invaluable. You know, I look at the teams we work with at Data Tribe coming out of the National Security Agency. Man, are they bright. They are wicked, wicked, wicked smart. And they do not suffer fools. So, you know, you better not walk up with, my advice is based on this book I read or this class I took. You know, it better be, you know, yeah, I've been in the line of fire. You know, I have been exposed. I have been at risk. I understand. And that establishes a bond based on respect. That really allows the venture capitalist to be more effective with the entrepreneur, quite frankly. And I think gives the entrepreneur a comfort level that this is not an intellectual, you know, theoretic exercise. It's a conversation, it's a planning, it's a partnering that's based on real world experience.
Right, absolutely. So if people wanted to learn more about you, Data Tribe, or Allegis Cyber, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, I mean, look, we got great websites. They got all the usual propaganda, but you'll get a feel for who we are and what we do. But you know, on there, you can reach out to me directly. You know, it's Robert at AllegisCyber.com or bob@datatribe.com. And, you know, it's, you know, I love both of our hats. I love the early stage stuff, and I love what we do on early stage venture. So, you know, frankly, it's hard to get a hold of me, but, you know, start with the website. And then if you want to have a conversation, you know, shoot me a note. You can find me on LinkedIn, and I will try and find time, if I can. Yeah, I just want to qualify, you know, it's my days start very early. They go very late. They're booked all day. You know, this is a treat for me to kind of take a few minutes away from some of the other conversations I deal with, Simon, to chat with you. And I really appreciate the invitation and the opportunity. I love helping entrepreneurs. I had plenty of help when I was a first-time CEO and when I was a second-time CEO founder. And so I know that a few words from the right people can have a significant positive impact on the trajectory of an entrepreneur. And if I can be part of affecting that in a positive way, I'm happy to do that.
That's great stuff. And I'll make sure that all the links are in the show notes below. Bob, thank you so much for coming into the conference room and talking to me today. I've learned so much, and just hearing the stories, hearing the advice, and just hearing your expertise has just been an absolute joy and a real education. So on behalf of everyone that's listened to this episode, Bob Ackerman, thank you so much for coming into the conference room.
Simon, thank you so much for having me. It's great to see you and great to do this together.
Coming up next week on The Conference Room, I'll be talking to entrepreneur and crowdfunding expert, Dr. Letitia Wright.
I was fearless back then. Looking back, I'm like, wow, where did I get this fearlessness from? I was learning business. This is a business. I started really running the show like a business. And so I spread out. I got nationally syndicated on DirecTV. So that is how I got into television. I want to do this thing called crowdfunding. I raised money for myself, for my own book. So my main thing was I wanted entrepreneurs to understand about this great new tool.
Thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it. And make sure you visit our website, theconferenceroompodcast.com, to see all the other episodes and to get access to the show notes and resources mentioned in this episode. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your network, or better still, go on to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other podcast platform and leave us a 5-star review. It'll only take you a moment, but it'll mean the world to us. And please don't hesitate to tell us which topics you'd like us to cover in future episodes. To get in touch, drop us a line in the comments section or send us a message on social media. Just search for The Conference Room Podcast or me, Simon Lader, on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, or TikTok. I'm always open to a conversation. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you'll be alerted when a new episode goes live every week. Thanks so much for listening to The Conference Room, and until next time, keep talking.